is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
From off the wall, give that baby, leave all the people things alone. There's other ways to get involved. Get involved, then. Don't be no fool, stay in school.
Good yawning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Friday, the 4th of October, 2024, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. I can tell you right now, I never expected the rapid evolution of Bahamian society. Like from the time I first heard this song to today, I could not have imagined how rapidly we have expanded and evolved. Also, I could not have at that age realized the extent to which I have no control over the expansion, the cultural shifts going on around me, but at the same time, I have all the control in it. I was too young at that age to understand, but something in this song hit me because this is one of the cassettes I teed from my daddy. I just had hoped that he didn't realize it was missing. And if he did, he remembered that he know Cody better than me. And he could go get another tape. And so I could not imagine what the Bahamas would have become when I was a little girl. But this song caused me to imagine that I was going to be a part of that change. And so joining us today for a part of our show is Dr. Kim Williams Pulfer, author of the book Get Involved: Stories of Bahamian Civil Society. We're going to talk with Ms. Williams Pulfer, Dr. Williams Pulfer, about this book, which is more than just a book, it's an experience. It's an experience of living our experiences, understanding civil society, and I think it's going to be a wonderful discussion. I don't mind interrupting sports slightly because when we get into the subject matter, we'll see that there's even a connection to the sporting world in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas with this subject matter. So,
good morning.
Please introduce yourself. Tell us who you is, what school you've been to.
That's right.
And what your favorite Junkanoo group is.
Oh, that's, I don't even know if I want to.
The hard questions.
Okay. So good morning, everybody. Good morning, Bahamas. Pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation to talk and to share. Mm-hmm. Dr. Kim Williams Pulfer, born and raised in Nassau, Bahamas, proud graduate of St. Thomas More Primary School, as well as St. John's College.
Mm-hmm.
The best. Graduated in 1996.
Big baby?
No, listen. I carry that proudly. Miss Arlene Nash Ferguson was our principal. I'm so proud to be under her tutelage and leadership and the amazing folks there. I am back and forth between home, and I live abroad, but I'm also a researcher. I'm a researcher of something most of you probably know called philanthropy. But I'm very interested in thinking about philanthropy on our terms, in our context, in our space, mm-hmm. in the Bahamas, in the Caribbean, in what they call the Global South. So here to talk about the book and talk more about getting involved.
I was researching philanthropy myself, right? Mm-hmm. And then somebody said to me, you use so many 10-pound words, you're supposed to be giving us the money. Why are you asking me for money? Oh, I gave up on that life shortly thereafter. And so we're going to take a look at the book. What is it? What inspired you to write it? What does it have to do with us, right? Like, in the present, what does it have to do with us right now? And what does it have to do with our future? But before we get there, I have a couple of quick notes. The first is a bit of an awkward note, right? I had reached out after identifying the mother of the young man that was killed in the motorcycle accident a couple of weeks ago. I'd identified the mother and reached out to her. Unfortunately, we were unable to connect. However, what I do know is that his funeral service is taking place tomorrow, October the 5th. And so the young man's mother's name is Precious Sweeting. What I find very unfortunate is that I have not seen his name published anywhere yet. The victim of a traffic fatality. One that is still under investigation, right? As if it matters. Even if he were the cause of the accident, he should die with dignity. And that includes acknowledging who he is, because he still is to the people in his life. And while it may be convenient for many of us, maybe even five of us, to forget the whole sordid affair, the young man deserves dignity in death. We all do deserve dignity and death because we don't die alone. Although we like to talk all this brave, you come in the world by yourself, you're going to leave by yourself. You don't die alone. The little part of you that lives in those that love you dies along with you and then is rebirthed. It can only be rebirthed if we create the environment in which those loved ones can continue to live with us. But if we continue to treat death with indignity and pretend like some of us never deserve to live, then we never meet where people can rest in peace. Where we can rest in peace with our loved ones, with our ancestors, with those who have gone before us. Dear media, because again, I acknowledge that I am not a journalist. I just come on the radio and talk about the news and crack jokes, try to get people to join me in this raccoon hunt. That's it. But I implore the media to take up this story, to discover who this young man was, so at the very least, he can rest in peace. And this is so important. This is so important. The text says, Aaron, please be specific. Two young men were killed via motorcycle accidents. Was it the one who was knocked by the vehicle belonging to a senior judge, the driver of which has not been identified as yet? You know that song? Is it Jodeci? I only got 5 minutes to show you how much I love you. Maybe that's a Bahamian remix. I don't know. Five is on my mind. So no, it wasn't the young man who was knocked down and then the motorcycle was stolen or removed from the scene and the family have no idea of the location. And that it's been about 2 months and they have no word on the classification of the death, right? That's not the one I'm speaking about. I'm speaking about the one where the young man, from the article written in the Tribune, the driver of the vehicle felt a bump in the front of their vehicle. They stayed on the scene after the accident. That's the one I'm talking about. Again, I only got about 5 minutes to talk about it, so we're going to have to move on. Texas says, I don't know if you saw the live feed of that accident, but media was advised by police. Dear Texter, you can tell I am reading your text, but not out loud. This is a very delicate situation. And as excited as I am, I'm going to measure my words. Text, I read your text. Let's just say we got five in 2021, 5 good years left of this administration, but now it's only 2.5. Okay, let's go. We're going to go through the sports headlines very quickly because there are some young players. First of all, Team Bahamas gears up for historic Charifta Gymnastics, November 29th through 30th, 2024, in Kingston, Jamaica. We are showcasing a team of 23 athletes, 23 little children jumping and tumbling and rolling. It's going to be a good time. Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, Barbados, Bermuda, and the Cayman Islands have all confirmed participation. All of them supposed to be bringing 20 to 30 athletes as well. We look forward to that. Now, perhaps the most exciting story of the day, the ACW returns with the Fight for Paradise, Mr. Newry. Mm-hmm. I have a chance to reignite my wrestling career.
Again?
See, that's what reignite means.
Okay.
I used to be a champion of Bonnie Ray. Not Johnson Road, the wider John, just Bonnie Ray. I was a champion.
I was hoping that you forgot your past of beaten man. But you bring it back up. Now everybody got to know about it.
Now that I'm a professional wrestler, I'm only allowed to wrestle women. But back in my amateur days, Mr. Newry, I could tumble you up. Listen, we're looking forward to WJTJG, ACW champion Elijah the Pope Burke, Lince Dorado, and Ring of Honor Kenny King. Listen, this is going to be exciting. Kalia Caprice, Sierra Breeze, when she fights with the WOW organization, she uses the name Sierra Breeze. But when she fights with ACW, she is Kalia Caprice. See, I like that. That's like the Chichani. You don't know who you're going to get. And she's, remember she beat the young lady, JC Storm, but in the Bahamas, her passport is say JC Spry. You can't come to the Bahamas storming. We downgrade you to a Spry, baby. Anyway, we're excited. They're coming back. The event is set for October 19th. We got a little bit of time. You guys, get your tickets. We have to go out. Have to go out and cheer on our Bahamian wrestlers. And to all my people, you know, when you fill out the form and they say, are you between the ages of 45 and 55? That category right there. We got to be there. We get all of that energy you had for Tyree Pride back in the 80s. We get to bring that for Kalia Capri. It's going to be a good time. Now, Mr. Newry, another wrestling story, kind of, for Quebec Judo Open. Our cousin, Cara Hanna, is preparing for the Quebec Judo Open November 9th through 10th. She won a bronze medal in the girls' 70 kilograms division at the Commonwealth Youth Games in Nassau in 2017, and she is back at it. Also, another quick highlight, chess masters return from the 45th World Chess Olympiads. These are all wrestling stories, Doctor. Right? Some of us wrestle in the ring, some of us wrestle on the mat, and some of us wrestle on the board with brains, right? Yeah. The Bahamas Chess Federation proudly announces a successful return of its chess masters from the 45th World Chess Olympiad in Budapest, Hungary. A standout moment of the tournament was when three players earned new FIDE titles based on their performances. Chica Pride, the youngest team member and now the youngest woman candidate master in the country. Candidate master Chappelle Wims in the RBDF. I love that. And one more name, Candidate Master Joseph Ferguson, a professor at the University of the Bahamas. They all did extremely well. Key individual performances include WFM Polina Carolina's impressive achievement on board one, winning 7 out of 11 games. That's impressive because I am currently 0-35 against the Raccoons in my backyard. Say congratulations to the entire Bahamas chess team. Carl Heal defends his WBA title. He's now 8-0. Another Bahamian headed to the playoffs. Anton Richardson, coach with the New York Mets. They booked their ticket. They're in the National League wild card round while Jazz and the... What team Jazz is play for in New York? Anyway, they clinched the number one spot. They clinched the number one spot. And Jazz reached 24 home runs and 40 stolen bases to close out the season. They say for a small... No, let me rephrase that. For a compact and shorter player, he is still batting beyond, right? He is going beyond his capacity for swinging, and he has just driven his team all the way to the playoffs. We're going to take a pause right there. Get one more text. That song by Avant Aaron, it's 4 minutes, but if you remember, it came out in the Perry Christie era. That song is 5 minutes long. Everything in the administration was late. Thank you very much, text. Thank you very much. Okay, let's get into our conversation. Dr. Williams Pulfer, get involved. Stories of Bahamian Civil Society. Tell us, what is it?
I mentioned this. We had a wonderful evening at the NAGB last night talking about the book, and it was an honor for you to be there. Thank you so much for your advocacy. It's a book that simply tells the story of philanthropy, the belief that philanthropy exists in every culture, every society, every community. But when I studied at the university, Indiana University, it was difficult for me to find stories of us, stories of people who look like us, in the Bahamas, in the Caribbean, in the rest of the African diaspora, in the global South. And so I felt called to do this work, to think about that universal experience and bring it home to us. And I wrote this as a meditation and an invitation, a meditation on all of the people, experiences, places that I encountered while I grew up here that showed me the power of philanthropy, even if they didn't call it, right, by that name. But I also wrote it as an invitation for conversations like this, for other folks to take up the mantle and do other work around who we are as a people and how philanthropy has driven us for a very long time.
Absolutely. Right at the end of the presentation, I delved into it a little bit last night while I was on Raccoon Watch, I'll be honest with you.
I love this raccoon.
Why you love the raccoon?
I'm so intrigued.
He is intriguing, I can be honest with you. So here's what came up for me when we talk about philanthropy and civil society, and when you said just now, a meditation on the experiences that you have had and your observances of how philanthropy works, even if we don't call it that in the Bahamas. And the thing that comes up for me is that Bahamians are still very giving people.
Absolutely.
It is difficult to ask people to give outside of an organized system of giving, right? It borders on offensive, but it's unreasonable and untenable to say to people, you got plenty of money, why you don't just give me some? But if we present systems within which people could give. So, for instance, in the Obama presidential campaign, he created a system that showed lower income people that they had a real and viable place in this system. Your $5 counts. It matters. If you send it, here is how it will be received. Here is where it will go. Here's how it will be used. And so that while we chastise Bahamians, oh, Bahamians don't give anymore, they're so hoggish, it's unreasonable to expect people to just pull money out of their pocket and throw it in the air.
That's right.
But when you present Bahamians with systems, or what we see more often, reputable organizations with a track record of using in donations and showing us how they've been used, and people are more willing to give.
There's just so much. I mean, that was such a full response that you gave. So first of all, I think that scholars of philanthropy talk about informal giving. So that's the first thing. That oftentimes is lower scale, smaller scale, often grassroots. So when you take a look at that, that is pretty strong in the Bahamas, right? I know anytime I was going off to school, church members, aunties, uncles, they stop by the house and they say, here, take this, right? No strings attached. We want you to do well. And this money that we give, right, is a gesture of our support for you. And then you're talking also about larger scale giving, right? So how do we take those small pieces of money and use it towards a larger goal? And, you know, I would also argue, I've seen examples of that in the Bahamas as well. But I think you're correct about having clear structures and plans. So, for example, I grew up in my local church, and I grew up in the 80s and the 90s. And I remember one of the building campaigns. As a little girl, I remember sitting in those rooms with all of the adults talking about how are we going to build this church right here in Nassau, Bahamas, right on Carmichael Road, Golden Gates Assembly, that big church. I remember sitting in those conversations. So we have the capacity to do it. But I think you're absolutely correct, Aaron. The book is a way for us to take a step back and look at what we have done, what we have accomplished, and think about how we can build it more to scale to support some of the bigger issues we're trying to solve today.
Absolutely. Okay, so another thing that struck me right away is that Junkamu, the grand social and cultural activity, is a central part of your thinking and reasoning in the book. Now, I tell you, I'm a bit of an opportunist today and take advantage of every moment. We are now embroiled in a national affair, although the Junkanoo community will say, this ain't have nothing to do with y'all, this is a Junkanoo thing. And the organization at the center of the affair, the group that we can't call the Valley Boys right now, would say, this have nothing to do with the rest of y'all, this the group we can't call the Valley Boys right now affair. And I put on the table that this conversation now requires national engagement, because a lack of conversation in the space, a lack of acknowledgement of the grander importance of Junkanoo, has created an environment in which the first global Junkanoo conference is going to take place in Canada, and the Bahamas has not been invited. Despite the fact that we have a Bahama and an Atlantis in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas that renders us capable of hosting a global Junkanoo conference. And I argue that it is the dereliction of duty and the lack of acknowledgement of the grander importance and value of Junkanoo in our lives that has created this environment in which these things can happen. And because of this dereliction of duty, what we also see is not maximizing or taking advantage of in a positive way the grand amount of philanthropic engagement in the Junkanoo space. Our cousin, Mr. Nui, I can get in trouble from our cousin, Spence Finlayson's brother, who brought Junkanoo into the workplace, who saw it as a model, right, to support our, saw the grandness of it and the potential of it. But I think it's so apropos that, right, you sort of start us on this journey, bringing us together to this experience in Junkanoo. So if you could tell us about that. And why Junkanoo, and what are those elements of Junkanoo that make it a central part of this conversation?
No, that's great. Yeah, so the book opens with my visit. You know, I come back and forth quite a bit, and I was at one of the Junkanoo performances. I can't even remember. I think it was Boxing Day, and I don't even remember the group, but I do know it was an A group. And the group was out, and it is that moment of Junkanoo that we all know, the moment you wait for, right? The music is so sweet, and the crowd is rocking. You're almost swaying along with the trees if it's a breezy night. And they played a song. And as you all know, they call that call and response, right? The Junkanoo band plays the song, and the audience, if they know it, sing along because it's a favorite tune. And the song that they played was Get Involved. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to hear the song, participate, but I also took a step back. And I'm watching the crowd engage. I'm watching the crowd help the junkanooers perform well by picking up things off the streets, right? So they don't get dinged, right, in terms of the points. And that's when I had the moment for the book. I always knew I wanted to talk about our stories around philanthropy, but to be in that moment, junkanoo was a powerful metaphor mm-hmm. for me to think about civil society because it includes, it's a living, breathing, it's full of action, full of energy. It's not stagnant. It's not static. And that's who we are as a people, right? We are people who are always trying to be better, do better, work together. And so the points that you make about junkanoo and the potential for junkanoo to continue to be this cultural identity piece is something that we need to continue to talk about. The case that you mentioned about the Valley Boys as a researcher, I think it's a powerful case around governance, mm-hmm. right? Who has the right to rule, who has the right to who owns it. And I think you're also making a point, junkanoo belongs to all of us, mm-hmm. right? That's the advocacy that you're making there. So junkanoo is such a powerful way for us to think about our collective selves, how we organize ourselves, what it means to have a very clear mission. And, you know, throughout the book, I spent a lot of time thinking about two things, junkanoo as the practice and junkanoo as the spirit. Mm-hmm. There's a spirit of junkanoo. And that spirit of junkanoo bleeds over into so many parts of our lives, right? The sense of collaboration, the sense of working together towards a common goal. You can find all of that in junkanoo. And what's so fascinating is when I sit in other rooms, right, where mm-hmm. there aren't many Bahamians in the room, oftentimes people would say certain things like, well, you know, certain people don't know how to organize. Certain people don't know how to run an organization. And I say, well, if you take a look at every junkanoo group, there's a counter story to your claims, right? So mm-hmm. I appreciate you, Aaron, for saying that because we need to do a little bit more work to make sure we talk about junkanoo as an organization, as a spirit, and as a practice and see how we can propel that for our children and for future generations.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And that even if you are not in the junkanoo community, you're not a junkanoo, you can still experience the type of philanthropy that takes place in the junkanoo space, right? How people build for each other. They understand, right? Like it's a microcosm of our living world. And if people could, and then have an opportunity to enjoy it. The way that brothers reach out to brothers and support brothers, right? In the interest of my junkanoo group, in the interest of the parade, in the interest of the community. And, you know, what a wonderful and beautiful model. Now, the book is academic.
Yes.
It takes a bit of reading.
Yes, it does.
And so I actually would recommend the same way that we have book clubs and we read fictional works and like the feminist book clubs, we explore these themes. I think this is a great opportunity for church groups and organizations to sit down and make it a group project to read together to understand. But tell us a bit about the book and the chapters.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Indeed. So, you know, as a premise, a lot of folks have the connotation of philanthropy as being related to giving away large sums of money.
Mm-hmm.
But if we look at the word philanthropy, which simply means in the Greek, love of humankind, I was always astounded it reduced that to giving away large sums of money.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because love is more than that. Of course, it would be wonderful, right, for an organization to receive a large gift from a donor. But there's so many other ways that we love each other, right? So I began with that premise that it is a broad practice. It exists everywhere, but it is underdocumented, right, in terms mm-hmm. of what we do and how we do it. So what I had to do is I had to think about our unique history, our histories in the region, especially these histories around things like enslavement and colonialism. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes philanthropy thinks about, how to say this, the winners of quote-unquote history.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily call them the winners, but that's how they're often cast. I wanted to think about those people who were transported here, oftentimes against their will. How did they come to this new place, this new land, and figure out how to survive? And what I learned through the research, as you mentioned, it's very academic. It took me a lot of time to look through archives and different documents and talk to so many different people. And then to also read broader theories about the Caribbean, about enslavement, about our history, about colonialism, to put together this story of philanthropy.
Awesome. I have so many things going through my head at the same time. Nuri, you could jump in.
Yes, go ahead.
Certainly. When you say there's an academic book, you know, I pause and say, oh, Lord, you know, I'm dyslexic. I can't read this, right? But you also mentioned stories. And I need to understand, or I want to understand, when you say stories, is it the book of narratives, of examples? And can you get
it? I totally get everyone's anxiety around academia and academics. So in the book, I'm attempting to do two things. First of all, I want to prove that we have a practice of philanthropy to other researchers so that they can go out and expand the work that they do. On the other end, I want to make sure, and it, you know, sometimes I did it really, really well. I hope I did it in most places. I wanted to make sure that Grammy and Auntie,
it's, you know, accessible,
could still find pieces of themselves in the work. And researchers use a lot of different methods to do their work. You see a lot of surveys, people do interviews, but what I wanted to think about were stories, right? And researchers think about those just as much as we think about them. And one researcher, she says, we tell stories about ourselves so often. The place for us to understand who we are, right, is to take a look at the story. So, of course, the book is littered with, so we are storytelling people.
And an oral society,
and
so
oral
that's how we transfer the information.
Absolutely.
I have a caller on the line, and when we get to from the caller, I want to touch on some of those stories, and then I want to examine the drug era and how that impacts the evolution of philanthropy in the country. Good morning, caller.
I guess I got you guys a mistake. I was trying to find some information concerning the tickets for tomorrow at the port. But what's the topic of the question?
Oh no, you mean the Eddie Minnis concert tomorrow?
Yes, ma'am.
Man, look here, I could be honest with you. Here's a quick fix. You on your phone? You got a phone?
A phone?
Yeah. Yes, so ma'am. You can call the Junkanoo Museum on the port. But if you just search on your phone Nassau Cruise Port,
okay,
a number will pop up.
Nassau Cruise Port.
Right, or the Junkanoo Museum on the port. So I have Dr. Kim Williams-Pulfer in studio, right? And we're talking about her new book, Get Involved, Stories of Bahamian Civil Society. And so we're looking at how philanthropy has operated historically in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, because traditionally we think about philanthropy means you give large sums. If you don't have $1 million, the conversation isn't about you. But you remember that verse in the Bible where God said, you see that woman over there? She had $100 and she give you 95. But the other boy over there had $1 million and he only give you 95. She is the winner. It's like the philanthropy is not about how much you give, but about how much of what you have that you are able or willing to give. So that's what kind of what we're talking about, and stories in the Bahamian narrative that exemplify that or manifest that in our experience.
Well, that lady, like you described, those individuals only give, they give from their heart. The other individuals, they give from somewhere else. They're also expecting something.
Absolutely. You know, and then there are those, well, there are those of us that are not old enough to remember that we are still in the throes of a drug era. And I remember someone called and said, oh, I remember when you could leave your house with nothing, a new pair of shoes, because people was just fluff with money.
Well, Queen, as you very well know, because you're well voiced, I listen to you all the time, by the way.
Yes, sir, thank you.
On the family island, you still could do that. And only when people move from Nassau, sorry to say, like a friend of mine said, I mean, this might be off topic, a friend of mine said, you've got a bunch of crime in the Bahamas. I said, not necessarily so, maybe Nassau centric, but if you check the other family islands, it ain't the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely. And I think that the way that crime is happening or what motivates crime is our misunderstanding of how society is supposed to work, how it has worked traditionally, and why it's not. Like, people are really upset that you can't give when they ask, but they don't realize that that what people were giving was an extra, and they had no idea where the extra came from. But it turns out that a lot of the extra came from nefarious activity.
Activities, yes.
And now
those nefarious activities now is being covered down by the law, so you can't do it as easy as you do it before now. An average person living from paycheck to paycheck and a half, so they can't even survive it. It takes about 2% also based on minimum wage alone.
Yes, absolutely. And so last night at the presentation, Loretta Butler-Turner made a great intervention, but she talked about a culture that has developed where people who have access to philanthropic support tend to hog it up, right? And in many instances, it's because they are actually ignorant to the economy that they're accessing. And they don't realize that things have changed drastically.
I agree.
Yes,
part of it too is selfishness too. You know, they keep everybody living like they ain't gonna die. Everybody mm-hmm. they want to go to heaven, but they don't want to die.
Absolutely,
be a hog. I mean, you have individuals who have millions of dollars. You think it's power they're looking for? They still want more money, and they still ain't trying to give it. That's the same thing what's happening right now. Sorry to say, in government, you understand? Yeah. They ain't really looking out for us.
Then I understand why people feel that way, cousin. I understand. Thank you very much for your call. Absolutely. There is, I think, a profound lack of understanding of what the pie is, how the pie is shared up and how it's supposed to be shared up. And for those who were not conscious of how they were benefiting from a drug era, from a numbers era, from a gray economy, financial services era, as those things shrink and dwindle, you develop a degree of resentment because you still perceive, because you see the cars and the houses, you still perceive that everybody's still buff and fluff. But you don't see where they are sacrificing and scrimping behind the curtain, right? Anyway, so doctor, of all of the chapters, there are other ways to get involved. But let's start right there. What do you mean by submarine narratives and transnational action?
So submarine narratives comes from the poet. I know Mr. Nuri said he loves poetry. Kamau Brathwaite, very mm-hmm. famous Caribbean poet. And he talks about the connections we have across the region. And he says, in order for you to understand those connections, the unity of who we are is submarine, right? So when you think of a metaphor of a submarine, you may not always see it as clearly. They are beneath the surface. Mm-hmm. So you have to probe a little bit. So that chapter is thinking about who we are here in this nation, but how we are always been connected. So I spent a lot of time talking about Bahamians in the founding of Miami, right, and how those connections between Miami here and the Caribbean help to shape a broader sense of philanthropy. Throughout the book, there's so many instances in the 1920s where Bahamians were known as the radicals in Miami, right? Mm-hmm. Something would happen, a labor dispute, and they would be the ones to notably to kick off.
Imagine Bahamians was the Aaron Greens of Miami.
It was true. And so I also spent a lot of time thinking with a scholar and a writer. I don't know if folks know her, Zora Neale Hurston, mm-hmm. who is someone really important. And she spent a lot of time in the Bahamas. People talk a lot about Zora. She's well known in her travels to Jamaica and Haiti, but she actually traveled here. And when she came here, she saw, she woke up and she heard the man doing the rum running, singing about the Bellamina. She came and she observed things like the fire dance.
Mm-hmm.
She saw a lot of political folks doing things. She talked about the sings. She said, whatever you do, Bahamians put you in a sing. And she said she did her best to avoid getting put in a sing. And I use all of those examples to talk about our creative and civic capacity, right? Even in those early years, yeah.
Okay, well, we have a caller on the line.
Sure.
I need to know what a sing is.
Okay.
So when we get back from this caller, good morning, caller. Do you also want to know what a sing is? Good morning, caller, you there? Producer, let's check that line. We missed you, caller. I am sorry. Okay, what is a sing? Hold on, let me tell you why.
Okay.
First of all, Mr. New, you know who we haven't heard from in a long time? I need to go drive through the corner. Bremen. Remember when Brayman said you need to sing the oar to know how to scull? And I thought that was the most beautiful piece of poetry. Let's go to the phone line to sing and be in rhythm mm-hmm. to scull the boat. He's saying you need to sink the oar. I need to know what a sing is.
Okay. Oh, you're right. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So a sing is little kids do it here. Like whatever you go about during the day, it ends up in a song. So she references Sponge Money Never Done.
Sponge right? Money.
That's right.
Yeah.
Where does that come from? The folks who were working doing sponging.
But why she didn't want... Okay, hold on. Let's go to the phone line and then we're going to find out why she didn't want to get caught up in the sink. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning, Ms. Green. Good morning, Ms. Nguyen. Good morning to your guests.
Morning, morning.
Yeah, I'm a 1982 graduate, intelligent lady, St. John's College, so I'm a bit older than you.
Okay.
I want to know if I should add on a book to buy on my list because I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Firstly, C.A. Nguyen and Erin.
Yes, sir.
Jim Lawlor was my religious knowledge teacher at St. John's College.
Nice.
And,
nice.
I wanted to give a testimony, right?
Mm-hmm.
He really is sincere. He used to counsel me and give me all kind of good advice. He used to sit me down and talk to me. And he used to tell me, he said, but you know something? Everything you do, the other students do. And he tell me I was a leader. He used to just, he really is sincere in, like, in, when he was a teacher,
mm-hmm.
because he was one of the best. And I just wanted, I wouldn't have called my name on the radio, but I had my voice. I saw him years ago when I was jogging the bridge one morning. I didn't even know he was still here. So I know I'd be buying his book. Now, I just want to ask this young lady, my schoolmate, a question. You mentioned philanthropy, right? Now, you realize that there's a dark side to it, in which, you know, some people, they use it to duck taxes, and they also use it to carry out sinister agendas. Like we see the donation of the vaccines in Kenya, in which they were actually sterilization vaccines in the guise of tetanus. And I could go on and on, not about conspiracy, but what I'm saying is we see an infamous billionaire has made an extra $100 billion whilst smiling and portraying humanitarianism on the airways and on the black children in Africa with a needle in the background. Now, to you, or maybe, I don't know, to the unsuspecting public, he is doing good. But then it's a counter-narrative when you really delve into it. So, I mean, I wanted to know if your book mentioned anything about the dark side of philanthropy. That's all I wanted.
No, that's great. Well, Schoolie, it's good to hear your voice. Good to meet you. It's so funny. Last night at the book talk, Jim Lawlor was actually there. And just like you, Mr. Lawlor was a powerful force in my life, right, in terms of my leadership and my thinking about history. So it was wonderful to have him there and to spend some time and talk about the book. I appreciate your question so much because philanthropy, sometimes they get nervous when we get to be critical of that type of big philanthropy. But mm-hmm. I think you're making some important comments about it, right? Folks who have that big money have a lot of power, right? And what they do with that power may or may not be appropriate or right, or may not, as you say, be in the service of humanitarianism or of a humanity. So research and work, we need to do more work about distinguishing between what I call philanthropy from below, which is that grassroots, relational, focused on mutuality forms mm-hmm. of philanthropy, and then those other types of giving that seem nice on the surface and potentially might be sinister below. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. Producer, let's prep the next caller. Because like in that space, I think a principle needs to be laid down that the amount of money that you're willing to give does not authorize you or enable you to make decisions on behalf of other people or to ignore or flaunt the standards and principles that we have established both as political contracts, as legal contracts, and as social contracts, right? That how much money you have, you cannot tell people what the right decision is. You can only create an environment in which people can make better decisions for themselves, right? And I think that's how we thwart the dangers of a narcissistic philanthropic culture. Good morning, caller.
And how are we going to stop this farce that the Saudians make sense? How are we going to stop this then, Eric?
Okay, Mr. Sawyer, I know we won't talk football today, right? Let me just acknowledge, and I apologize if we can't talk football today, but let me just acknowledge that you were correct. The Dolphins
suck.
And the 49ers won.
Yeah.
This week, you guys getting ready to raggy y'all.
Bang, bang.
Yeah. You're doing well this week. Okay. Let me just run through this dead quick. We got a couple minutes. I didn't think that at the end of week four, we would see the Vikings and the Vikings and the Chiefs leading with 4-0 and the Jaguars at 0-4. I just want to say.
Dolphins
are not the Jaguars.
And the Vikings, they have a backup quarterback. Sam Darnold, that was our backup quarterback last year. He was a bust with the Jets. He was a bust with the Panthers. I don't understand how. Well, anyway, it's a good offensive line, better defense, and he has an all-star wide receiver.
All right.
Just one play caused them to beat us. One play. One play.
I'm mad for y'all. Listen, New York, Liberty, they up 2-0 against the Aces. Yep. They say that, just very quickly, WNBA teams are 18-0 in playoff history when leading 2-0 in a best-of-five series. So the odds are in Jonquil's favor. It looks like the Liberty are going to the finals, and they beat...
this year for the Aces, sorry to say.
Yeah, yeah. Jonquil is a major part of that success. We say good on you, Jonquil. We can talk more about it next week.
Caitlin Clark is the rookie of the year.
Yeah.
WNBA.
I want you to know that I have 18 sentences. Like, I full it out. She really is impressive.
Yeah.
Caitlin.
Yeah, she's the future of the WNBA.
I mean, I didn't say all of that. I just say it.
Yes. I mean, she in the first year doing her and Angel Reese, as much as they try to say that they are enemies, they are very good friends.
Oh, yeah.
Very good friends. So they're the future.
Yeah.
They can compete forever.
She became the first WNBA rookie to have at least 30 points and 10 assists in a game. She had 31 points and 12 assists. Set a WNBA single-game record with 19 assists. But, Mr. Sawyer, I got to go. I want to thank you for joining me.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of a conclave. I say, let me just step up really quickly and just remind all Saudi fans that there, you guys suck. This week, y'all have the worst game. Y'all playing the Patriots. That's another sucky game. And I'm sorry for the people that have relocated. I have to suffer from watching that, all you guys.
If I was in a mermaid disguised as a dolphin, I'd run hard, but I know my powers. We can see y'all in the playoffs.
Yeah, in the playoffs?
Yes, sir.
Playoffs?
I wanted to end it on a joke. Be good.
Yeah. What are you on?
Thank you, Mr. Sawyer. I'll see you next week.
Yeah, man.
All right. Just before we go, I know we're almost all out of time. I wanted to touch on some of this idea of giving from below. Giving from what you have, right? As opposed to being a big shot to give. In a small island developing state where we have limited resources, the only thing that we can manipulate is time. And I want to implore the Bahamian driving public to consider that when you are driving, that you can give to others, you can give them time by being a conscientious, alert, and focused driver, by not wasting time on the road, not using your phone, the light turns green, and 3 seconds have passed before you noticed it, acknowledging, because you practice empathy, that everybody has a limited amount of time and they need as much time in their day as possible, using your time on the road wisely, understanding that while you could entertain yourself and use driving as a recreational activity, the effective and efficient movement of goods, peoples, and services is what drives an economy, both at the national level, at the community level, and at the personal level. And a way that you can give from below is by governing yourself, practicing spatial awareness, always being aware of how much you are consuming, whether it's time, whether it's road space, whether it's sidewalk, whether it's food, you also need. Right. And I think that that is a way that we on the ground can begin to reshape the systems that we are forced to live and operate in. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a philanthropic effort.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, that's wonderful. And at the center, what you talk about is empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Which is the demonstration of love oftentimes. But to just quickly go through the book, I hope people take a look at it. We have copies on sale at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas for $25. So please stop by to NAGB and pick up a copy. Lots of great stories about how we have always been philanthropic, the importance of friendly societies and burial societies, the importance of ASU in supporting community, right? You talk about empathy, the important social movements that have shaped so much of what we have today and stand on. Last night, we had a great conversation about the many, many artists, visual artists in particular, but not only, poets, writers, who imagined what the future country would look like and created these imaginative spaces for us to dream and to think. We consider that philanthropy. And then I spend a lot of time talking to folks like you, Aaron, folks who are doing this tough work of advocacy, of social service provision, thinking about how they think about the past, right? Who helped them get to where they were? Who were the Grammys and the neighbors and the folks that taught them philanthropy informally that have shaped them to go on and do this work? And so it's mostly a call to say we need to consider and continue to uplift civil society, right? The third sector in our country, because they're doing a lot of work, right?
Absolutely.
Around making sure people have space, making sure people belong, make sure people, you know, folks at Hands for Hunger, food, things like that.
And then people, and how people in their professional capacity also operate outside of that capacity with this. Since teachers who have historically come to work to teach, but before they come to work, they make a pot of soup.
That's right.
Because they know the students can't learn without eating.
That's right.
Right, and those are not recognized as philanthropic acts. They're not recognized as going beyond service, but they're so important and vital. Doctor, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having
if
me.
If you didn't have to leave the island, I would have told you you can stay, can come back.
I'll be back though.
And we have
I'd love
Zoom.
To come back. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I would love to come back. Thank you so much.
Yes, and I will invite you to appear on Mr. Nuri's show and Mr. Strawn's show.
Let's do it.
There's the Foundation with Howard Grant, the Z Live with Chivago Lang, and even Naughty Show. At 4 to 6, all of these audiences, I think, would appreciate an opportunity to explore their own lives through your work.
Oh, thank you. Wonderful.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
I'll be back. Let's do it.
Yeah, and Mr. Sawyer 99 Bangig, whatever y'all is called, the dolphins are swimming. As long as there's ocean, we swim in, buddy. And maybe we'll see you next year, but we'll be there. You guys have a great day. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Newey is up next.
They'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologists can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule an appointment at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner today.
Girl, you see how Cora eye look funny all black up yesterday?
But she say she bump into a wall when she's running after the churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
What you saying? You think something wrong between her?
It's a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman. Does mind her business, take care of them churn and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence. And we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me and I land up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call a text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how this work.
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll-free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them. And the messages get on mix-up before it leave your phone so nobody can know what you're saying.
So what we're waiting on then. Let's go earn some grocery money.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.